We're holding on page Nun Zayin in Baba Basra, Oischof Zayin. So we started talking about Eov. So now the Gemara had brought a long braisa that discussed various opinions when Eov lived, and in the course of that, the Gemara had quoted a couple of psukim. One of them was a pasuk where Eov criticizes his friends, and he says, "Hein atem kolchem chazisem, behold, you've all seen," meaning on the face of it, as the Gemara is going to say, that you've seen nevuah. V'lamaz hevel tehabalu. So why are you being so vain and so useless? And we said that was an indication that he lived in the time of the shoftim. So now the Gemara is going to bring two psukim in that connection. So first of all, Amar Rav Yechanan, Dorei Shel Eov Shotef B'Zima Haya. Eov's generation, the people of his time, were very addicted to Zima, to Znus. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Eov criticizes the friends. Hein atem kulcham chazisem. Behold, you have all seen, and the Gemara is going to explain that seeing is a lashon is related to a word of znus. V'lamazah hevel te'abalu. So why are you acting in this useless way, and you're telling me off for what you think I did wrong when you yourselves are being very immoral? Now, where we see that chazisem. We do see that chazisem comes to mean znus. Uchtiv shuvi shuvi asholamis and shirashirim. We have one of the psukim is the nations of the world say to the young woman who's the one of the protagonists of shirashirim, which represents the Jewish people. They say to her, shuvi shuvi, return, return, asholamis, you perfect one, shuvi shuvi, return, return, v'nechzebach, and let us look at you. Meaning, in other words, we want to be able to look at your women. In other words, come, return, leave your Jewish religion and accept ours, and come and assimilate and be mezana with us. So we see that the venechzer from the same shodosh as chazisem means to be immoral. So they're trying to convince the Jewish people to join them in their immorality, and the Jewish people answer them, nothing doing. So if Eov is criticizing his friends for that, and they were the leaders yet, then it means if even they were like that, how much more so the rest of the people? Well, the Gemara asks, Ema b'nevuah. Fine, but maybe the word chaza can equally well mean nevuah. Dichtiv chazoi Yishayo ben Omitz. As we see that Yishaya's visions are introduced with the word chazoi. And the answer is in Cain, yes, but if that's what it meant, Loma Zehevel Tehabalu, Amai Ulomali. Why would he be saying the second half of the pasuk? Why are you then why are you being vain and useless? Meaning, in other words, Marsha teaches out that the question is not so much that if they're true Nevi'im, then the question would be, why is he saying Loma Zehevel Tehabalu? Then it would mean if he's saying that you're true Nevi'im, then there'd be no reason that What do you mean? Why are you being useless? It would mean your nevuah is useless. He should just say kulchem chazisem hevel te'abalu. But it shouldn't be that way. So Marsha explains, in other words, what he's telling them is, you guys have false nevuahs. Yes, the word chazoin, of course, can mean a true nevuah, like by Yeshaya, but equally well, it can mean a false nevuah. But if that's what it meant, if he's saying you're giving false nevuahs, then Loma Zehevel Tehabalu also wouldn't fit. What do you mean, why are you being useless? You're saying false nevuahs, which are useless. So now if we understand that it means that you're being immoral, then we can understand that it fit the two halves of the pasuk fit together very nicely. So now he's saying, behold, kolchem chazisim, you're all being immoral, as in v'nech zebach. So why are you hevel te'abalu? Why are you telling useless things to me, and you're telling me off for all the things that you think I did wrong when you guys are even worse? By the way, Ion Yaakov points out as a side point over here, this may explain why Eov was punished with such severe yesurim. If it was a time when people are so much into znus, then it should have been Eov's own responsibility as a leader of the generation to tell them off for it and to be moicha. So in that sense, he deserved punishment. Even Yaakov points out one of the first things that the friends tell him, one of the first things that that Eliphaz tells him is Hine Yisauta Rabim. He says, behold, you have Yisauta many people. Now, one, you could understand that to mean that you gave them Musar. However, Rashi on the Pasuk explains that it means that whenever people up until now were having Tzaris, you would always tell them, you know, you deserve it. You have to consider what you did wrong. So therefore, but we don't see that he was telling people when they're committing Znus, and we're saying that generation was very addicted to Znus, that he should tell them off that you're doing wrong. So he didn't, and therefore we can say that was a contributing factor towards what he went through. Okay. The Amr Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan also says, now again, we had said that the opinion in the Braisa, Rabbi Eliezer, who had said that Eev lived in the time of the Shoftim, brought that Pasuk, Heinatim Kulchem Chazisim, Vlom Azeh Hevel Tevalu, and he had said, what was a generation that Kulay Hevel, that was all useless, was the time of the generation of Shvoit HaShoftim. So now let's get into that. What was going on in the time of Shvoit HaShoftim? V'omer Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv v'hi b'nei Shvoit HaShoftim. What does that mean? It was in the time of the judging of the judges. Now, the simple meaning it would mean, it was in the time when the judges judged the Jewish people. In other words, these are the opening words of Megillas Rus. So it would be setting the scene. When did the story of Rus happen? In the time of the Shoftim, during that period between Yehoshua and Shaul, when the Jewish people were being led generation after generation by different shoftim. It was altogether over 300 years. From when Yehoshua passed away until Shaul became king was 300, was a little under 307, it was 360 some years. So during that period, 360 odd years, during that time, the Jewish people were led by a succession of shoftim. First you have Othniel ben Knaz, and then Ehud ben Gera, and Shamgar ben Anos, and Devorah, and so on and so forth. The whole Sefer Shoftim tells of that period. So now, though, if that's all the Pasuk meant, and then there's a few problems. First of all, why be made Shvoit HaShoftim? Why not be Vayhi B'mei HaShoftim? Why the Vayhi? The Gemara mentions there's an opinion in a Gemara in Megillah and also in a Medrash in Medrash and Abba that whenever it says Vayhi, then it means that there's trouble. The other opinion says no, not necessarily Vayhi, but at least it's when it says Vayhi B'mei, then there's trouble. And here you have, now, fine, Vayhi B'mei Shvoit HaShoftim, the Pasuk continues, Vayhi Rav Ba'aretz, there was a famine in the land, but fine, if that's all it was, then it could be something, then the Pasuk could have said something like the Rif over here points out, then the expression would be, Vayhi Rav B'mei HaShoftim, or something like that, why B'mei Shvoit HaShoftim? So therefore, we're meant to understand that the Shvoit HaShoftim itself represents a problem. So what does that mean? So it means Dursh Shofet Shofetav. It was a generation that judged their judges. Meaning, in other words, it actually says the judges themselves were corrupt. So whenever a person was being judged by those judges, if the judge would tell him off and say, how could you do such a thing? You're guilty. You're liable for such and such. Then the other person, the defendant, would tell him, you know what? You yourself are worse. You have worse averus of your own. Now, one thing is, you know, you have, when we talk about the Shoftim, now you have again, those Shoftim who are named by name in the Psukim, beginning from Othniel ben Knaz and going all the way down to Eli HaKohen and then Shmuel. So we don't mean, in other words, we don't mean those Shoftim themselves. Those themselves, Eitz Yosef and other Mephoshim point out, were actually Tzaddikim. What we mean is, in other words, the common Shoftim you're supposed to have, after all, every city in Eretz Yisrael and every district in Eretz Yisrael is supposed to have judges. So those judges we're talking about, the individual city or circuit or whatever judges, were corrupt. The Medrash actually has a different point about some of the judges of those times. I don't know if it's the same time, but the Medrash says, for example, that after they came into Eretz Yisrael, the judges should have been going around from place to place with iron chains around their waists, meaning, in other words, like we're going to do it no matter what, and we're going to go through all hardships to go and teach the Jewish people Torah, and they didn't, and they figured we can just stay in our places, and if people need us, then they can come to us. So maybe that factors into this as well. But anyway, the point is that these judges were saying, were corrupt. So that's the real Vayhi B'mei. That's the real tragedy that the judges themselves were being judged by the people because they themselves were no goodniks. So, for example, omalei toil kesim and ben shinacha or enecha, if the judge would tell a person, remove the splinter from between shinacha would be your teeth, enecha would be your eyes, in other words, a small aveira that you have, omalei, the guy would answer right back, toil kurdim and ben enecha, you take out the beam from between your eyes, meaning you have much more serious, blatant aveiras than what you're accusing me of. Marshall explains that the metaphor would be as follows. Imagine, for example, that a person steals, that Reuven steals a beam and builds it into his house. Now you actually have the Gemara mentions elsewhere that it comes up in Gittin in particular that if a person stole a beam and built it into his house, he'd have to tear down the house and return the beam. The Chachamim made a takana called takanas morish that he's not required to do that because that's going to make it very hard for people to do tshuva. So now imagine that he goes and steals a beam and then he cuts it to size to fit in his house. Now somebody else then takes one of those chips that he sawed off it and uses it for a toothpick. So now he's going to say to the other guy, take out that toothpick. It doesn't belong to you. Then the first guy would say, yeah, but you stole the beam. So that's how those two things go together. There are also explanations, though, that here the Gemara is saying that the judges themselves were corrupt and the people therefore could accuse them credibly of more serious averus. There are actually other explanations in Midrashim, not so much that the judges were corrupt, but that the people wouldn't listen to them when the judge would order a person to do something al pitora, then the person would go and take revenge on him and harm him and whatever. So therefore they're judging not in the legal sense, but in the illegal sense. They're going and punishing their own judges rather than listening to them. There's also an interesting vort on it from the Dubna Magid. He says basically that the problem wasn't so much that the judges were corrupt. The very fact that they had to use force to make people listen to them shows that they weren't having mashpa on the people that they're supposed to. In any case, another example, Omalei. Suppose that the judge would tell a person, using an expression from a pasuk in Yeshaya, "Kaspei choyel l'sigim," your silver has become dross, has become not pure silver; it's adulterated with other metals. Omalei, he would answer right back with the end of that same pasuk, "Sovech mol b'moyim," your wine is mixed with water. In other words, the same idea. In other words, the judge would tell a person that you're doing wrong. You're adulterating your silver and you're allowing it to become corrupt. And the other one replies right back, and you're selling inferior wine. Marsha also explains there's a connection between the two of them. In other words, Kaspei Choyel B'Sigim suggests that it was originally thought to be silver. In other words, a person would take base metal and pretend that it was silver and pass it off to the storekeeper. Then, meanwhile, the storekeeper would give him wine mixed with water, but he couldn't even have the excuse, but I knew that you gave me inferior coinage, because to begin with, he thought he had actually gotten silver. So that in that case, then you're doing even worse. You're knowingly cheating me without even having an excuse. So that kind of thing. Different explanation. One of the Mephoroshim points out another point of it as well. When the silver is adulterated with other metal, look, it comes naturally that way. Silver naturally comes mixed with other metals, and you have to purify it. So fine, you didn't do a good job purifying your silver. The other one retorts back, and you put water into your wine. You deliberately went and mixed in something that makes it adulterated. Anyway, the point is, that was the time that we're talking about, and that's how it is that we had in the Braisa earlier that Rabbi Eliezer had said. That was a Dersh, a Kulei Hevel. It was a generation that was all, it was all vanity and uselessness, because you have even the judges themselves, who are supposed to be the example for the Jewish people, even they were corrupt and no goodness. Another thing we had learned in the Braisa was another opinion we had said that Eov lived in Reb Nosson had said in the Braisa that we learned yesterday, that Eov lived in the time of Malkus Shva, of the Queen of Shva, the famous one who visited Shlomo HaMelech. So now a little point about that. Amar Reb Shmuel Ben Achmeni, Amar Reb Yonasan, Kol Ha'omer Malkus Shva Isha Hoisa, anyone who says that this Malkus Shva was actually a woman, Eina Ela Toya, he's making a mistake. My Malkas Shva, Malchusa de Shva. Because what does Malkas Shva really mean? It means the kingdom of Shva. In other words, on the face of it, what the Gemara is saying, in other words, even though we always talk about the queen of Shva, and we assume that it was a woman, Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani, according to their simple explanation, is saying it was actually the actual ruler of Shva, who may well have been a man, and the Pasuk just phrases it as the feminine. Marshall says, though, that's not really what it means. The fact is, throughout that whole story over there in Malachim, and again when it repeats it in Divrei Hayomim, throughout it uses feminine pronouns. She came, she said, she saw, etc. You're going to say that all of that is in El Toya to say that it was a woman. So Marshall says like this. There's two ways that a woman can be a queen. She can marry a king, or she can be a queen in her own right. So now, what Rav Shmuel ben Nachmani wants to tell you, says Maharsha, is you might think that this was the queen, as in what they in English they call it the queen consort, that she had a husband who was the king, and he married her, and therefore she became the queen. That's not what it means. It means she was a queen in her own right. So therefore, Malchus HaDeshva, she herself is the ruling queen, not just the wife of the king. Maharal makes the whole point over here. What?
Married her, no?
There's a parenthetical note in Rashi on Divrei Hayomim, which is not really from Rashi actually, but whatever, in the Pirush printed under Rashi's name in Divrei Hayomim, there's a parenthetical note added there from some Ksav Yad, I don't remember where, that says that Shloimeh had relations with her, and later on Nebuchadnezzar descended from them. Yeah. Meaning, in other words, that as much as she was impressed by Shlomo's chokhmah and everything, apparently there was something bedakos at least that Shlomo did that led to. And the Ethiopians have a whole idea of it also, that Shlomo married Malchus Shiva and that their line of kings descend from them. That's a whole other matter. Yeah. Anyway. The Maharal makes a point over here. You know, we talked about yesterday that he explains this whole machlokas about when Eov lived is really a machlokas. What was a period of time when the Midas Adin, when the Satan would have been given so much power by the Eidishter that he would be able to harm a tzaddik like Eov? So he explains in this vein also, when you have a kingdom like that, which is a weak kingdom and being ruled over by Malchus Shiva, then that's a time like you have something lacking in what a kingship should be, and then that leaves room for the Satan to start manipulating things. Now that we dealt with all of that, with the details of when Eov lived, now the Gemara is going to go through the beginning of the story. The structure of Sefer Eov is as follows. You have the first two chapters are the prose part. Those tell the back story of how Eov came to be in this situation. And so the Gemara is going to go through and explain almost pasuk by pasuk, going through and explaining that section. After that, after all of the disasters that befell Eov, then the pasuk says his three friends came to visit him, and then most of the body of Sefer Eov is their dialogues back and forth. Eov gives a speech, his friend Eliphaz responds. Eov gives a response, the next friend Bildad Ashuchi speaks up. Eov responds to that, the third friend Sofar Naamasi speaks up. They go through a whole round like that, they go through a second round, they go even to a third round, although in the third round Sofar doesn't say anything at all, and Bildad only has a few psukim to say. Eov gives a speech kind of wrapping up what he thinks. Then at that point we learned yesterday, Elihu ben Barach al-Abuzi comes in and gives several speeches to Eov, explaining to him, each of them is trying to explain in their own way why this is happening and why the Eivishter makes these things happen. So each one, many of them are arguing to Eov that you yourself have done Averis and this is your kapara. Some of them are arguing that this is, some of them are arguing that because of this you'll have a better future, and each time Eov argues back against them and shoots down everything they say. Mephoshim have a field day explaining what's their viewpoint and what is Eov responding to each one of them. And they have quite a lot. Every Mephoshim has their own take basically on what's the nekuda of each one's argument and what Eov is responding to them. The Rambam, for example, in Morin Nebuchim has a whole long, interesting explanation of it, he identifies each of the three friends with one school of philosophy that existed in his time who had different ideas about how Hashem runs the world. You have the fatalists who think that who figure that everything is purely in Hashem's hand and is not even the Chira Chofshis. You have the ones on the contrary who think that Hashem doesn't really run things on a day-to-day basis, and then you have all kinds of other schools of philosophy in between those. So, anyway. So then you have a Lubin Barak al-Abuzi comes in. He gives several speeches to Eov, explaining to him, beginning to explain to him, to realize how to understand how the Eivishter runs the world. And then Hashem himself comes and speaks several times to Eov, and also explains to him various things as we're going to go on. Look, Gemara. The end of the story is that the Eivishter speaks to Eliphaz, the leader of the three friends, tells him, you know what, you guys did not speak to me properly like the way Eov did, and now, like we talked about yesterday, now you better have Eov die on your behalf, otherwise I'm going to punish you. So Eov davens on their behalf. Hashem is not angry with them anymore, and Hashem restores all of Eov's fortune double, and Vayomas Eov Zokinus Vayomim, and finally he died with at a peaceful old age. That's the structure of the Sefer in a nutshell. So now the Gemara is going to go through, in particular, the first two chapters, and then it's going to go through scattered psukim from throughout the Sefer and talk about what's going on over here with Eov and then his whole story. So, the psukim begin after it describes Eov's tremendous wealth and then fortune and everything. By Hi Hayoyim, it says the day came. Rashi on the psukim over there, also the Zohar, says that it was Rosh Hashanah, when the Eivishter judges the world. Vayavoyu b'nei ha'alakim le'isyatzav al Hashem, the children of Hashem, which means the Malachim, came to stand before Hashem. By Yoga Gama Satan, the Seichem of them, and the Satan also came among them, and because he's a Malach also, he's created by the Eidishter for a purpose, as the Gemara is going to talk later on. He's the Satan, he's the Yetzirah, he's the Malach Amavis, so he's also in attendance over there, and he has what to report. By Yoga Hashem of the Satan, so Hashem says to the Satan, may I interpret the Gemara, from where are you coming? And the Satan answers, Mishut Ba'aret, I'm coming from circulating around the land, or may he's Halach Ba'aret, and from walking around in it. So what does that answer mean? So Amal Afana, it means, the Gemara explains, means that the Satan answers, Ribbono Shel Olam Afana, Ribbono Shelim, Shatzi B'chol Olam Kulai, I've circulated around throughout the world, V'lo Matzasi Neman K'Avraham Avdecha, and I couldn't find anyone as loyal as Avraham, your servant. Now the Satan usually is the one who accuses, but here, the Gemara is going to explain later on, because the Eivishter praises Eov so much, the Satan, as the Gemara is going to explain later, the Satan had reason to be concerned that Eov's chosim might even overshadow Avraham's in Hashem's eyes. So he says, I didn't find any. Ben Yehoyada makes a point. You know, the Satan has very little trouble defending those who have already passed away. He wants to accuse those who are alive now. So if Eov right now is alive and Avraham's already in the Olam HaEmes, then fine, the Satan has no problem praising Avraham in order to get at Eov. Anyway, so I couldn't find anyone as loyal as your servant Avraham. Shamautalo, you Hashem told him, Kum hishalech ba'aretz la'orko l'rochba, the same word hishalech, umi hishalech ba, get up and walk around the land la'orko l'rochba, the length and the width of Eretz Yisrael, that because I will give it to you. So in other words, when the Satan says Mishut Ba'aretz or Mehis Halach Ba, he means I've been circulating around in the earth, or Mehis Halach Ba, and I'm coming now from observing the one to whom you said His Halach Ba. So over Shah, and yet when it came the time of Afri Lahochi, the Shah, Shabdikash Likvar Sara, but when the time came that Avraham needed to bury Sarah, Lemotza Mokum Likvar, he couldn't find a place to bury her. Adjakana ba'arameis shekel kesef, until he had to buy a place for 400 silver shekel. V'lahihir achamidisecha, and yet Avraham never questioned your midas, and he never said, well, if Hashem gave me Eretz Yisrael, why am I having to pay this fortune for the Ma'aretz HaMachpelah? So therefore, so the Satan is saying, I can't find anybody in the world who's comparable to him. Marsha points out, you know, before Hashem had told him, Kol Ha'aretz Ashata Roya, all the land that you see, L'cha Tinena, I'll give to you. Fine, that wouldn't have caused Avraham to question anything, because fine, it means in the future, I'm going to give it to you. But when Hashem is telling him, Kum Ishalach Ba'aretz Ba'orko L'rochba, go and walk around in Eretz Yisrael, meaning that it will be as easy for you to conquer, as easy for you and your descendants to conquer, as though it's just walking around. There's even an opinion, and later on in the Masechta, there's even an opinion that a person can be coined a land by walking around in it. And that opinion, Taka, derives it from the story with Avraham Avinu. The halacha is not like that, but nevertheless, anyway, so now you would think Avraham should have reason to complain. How you talking? Then I'm having to pay so much for a single burial plot in Eretz Yisrael. But yet he didn't complain. So that's the Satan is saying. Well, the pasuk continues in Iyov. Vayomer Hashem al Satan. So Hashem says to the Satan, "Asamta libcha al abdi Iyov. Have you paid attention to my servant Iyov?" I don't know why the word al is in parenthesis over here. It actually does say al in the pasuk. But I don't know. Anyway, ki ein kamoyu ba'aretz. There's nobody like him in the earth. There's nobody like him on earth. Ish tam v'yosher v'gomer. And Hashem praises him with several expressions of praise. He's tam. He's perfect in his emunah. V'yosher, and he's upright. And then the pasuk continues. V'yirei elokim. He fears Hashem. V'sor me'ra, and he stays away from evil. Now we have to ask, my v'sor me'ra. What's that? What's that last thing? V'sor me'ra. So the point of the question is, in other words, if he's already a tom v'yosher v'yirei elokim, why do you need to mention that he's sor me'ra? Of course, if he fears Hashem, then he's staying away from anything evil. So what is that adding? So it means Omer Rabba or Rab Abba Bar Shmuel Iyev Vatran b'mamonei haya. What it means is Iyev was liberal with his money. He would forego money that belonged to him. Min hogish shel olam, the way it normally works in the world, Adam noisin chatsi pruta l'chenveni. A person might give a half a pruta to the storekeeper. Meaning, Rashi describes, suppose, for example, a person had to hire somebody for a small job. So the job is really not even worth a pruta. Now, they don't really have half pruta coins. The smallest coin in circulation at that time was a pruta. So therefore, you might say to the worker, you know what? You and I will go to the store together. We'll buy something that's worth a pruta, and we'll split it. So that way you'll get your half a pruta pay, and I'll get the other half pruta of goods. Iyev wouldn't do that. He would give the entire pruta away. Meaning, therefore, Rashi says that so meira, it seems bad in his eyes to be stingy about such an amount, even though it's not really considered mammon. A half a pruta is not really considered mammon in halacha. Nevertheless, for so meira, he would stay away from something that he personally considered to be a bad midah, even though most people wouldn't think that way. Rabbeinu Gershom gives a different explanation of it on this Gemara. He says that the Gemara is doushing the word v'sor me'ra as though it was v'sor me'rein. Re'a as in like v'ahafta l're'ach ha'kamorcha. So v'sor, he would stay away from me'rea, from the kind of thing that other people, that colleagues of his, would think is a perfectly normal thing to do, but he would stay away from that. Maoshar points out, you know, here we just had before the discussion of whether Iyov was a non-Jew or a Jew. And now when it comes to Goyim, when we have in the halachas of Shev Mitzvah Shinanoyach, we've just learned it now in Rambam, both Shloisha Prokim and Perak Echad, that by them there's no concept that Gezel is only a Shava Prota. Ben Noyach, it says over there, can be executed for stealing even less than a Shava Prota. Well, then if Iyov in fact was a Goy, then it means, in other words, that he, Taka, was careful with that kind of thing, because for him, as a Ben Noyach, then yeah, even less than a Prota would be significant, but and therefore, instead of making sure to keep it for himself, he would liberally give it away to the other guy. If you say that he was Yisrael, fine, Marshall says, though, he was a Tamad Chacham and a Navi, and by a Tamad Chacham is also Medak. Is also medactic for even the small amount. He was a rich person, right. So Mephoshim points out, and Naf Yosef points out to me, I mean, he was fabulously rich. Why would a half a pruta matter to him anyway? So he explains basically that. So that's the point. In other words, even when it would really be going completely to waste, nevertheless, he wouldn't be medactic on it. It means that all the more so when it came to generous tzedakah, he would be generous. But even this kind of little thing where you would think it's just going to go to waste, then nevertheless, he still wouldn't give it away. There's also a point, by the way, in that connection that's brought from the Bali Amusa. You know, sometimes you see a person's real character in the tiny things he does rather than the big things. If Iyov goes and gives a large amount to tzedakah, fine, it means that that particular time somebody caught him in a good mood. But when you see that again and again, he's doing the chatzi pruta business, then you know what he's really made of. So that's how he would do it. The Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Gadol shenemar b'Iyov Yosef ma shenemar b'Avraham. The compliments that it says in the pasuk about Iyov is greater than what's said about Avraham. De'ivu b'Avraham k'siv, Hashem says to Avraham, ki ati yod after the akeda, he says, ki ati yodaiti, ki yirei elikim ata. Now I know that you fear Hashem. So Hashem is giving him one compliment, that he's a yirei elikim. But when it's talking about Eiv, Hashem speaks to the Satan, and he says, Ishtom v'yosha yurei alekim v'so'emeira. So Hashem is giving him many compliments. Now, the obvious question, all the Mephoshim ask, what is it? Are you going to say that Eiv is actually greater than Avraham Avinu? So one point is, first of all, of course, there is the point. Maharsha points out the fact is with Avraham, it's Hashem speaking directly to him, and we know you only say mitzvah shiracha shel adam b'fanav. You only say a small amount of a person's praises in his presence. You can say more of it out of his presence. So Maharsha though explains like this, because what it is the Satan misunderstood, precisely because Hashem is using so many compliments about Eiv, and therefore the Satan didn't realize this point about there's a difference between the fun of and the fun of. Therefore, he thought that Hashem is actually considering Eiv greater than Avraham, and as the Gemara is going to say later on, that motivated him to go and accuse Eiv and say that he's not really all he's cracked up to be. Different other Mephoshim talk about different angles on it. Anaf Yosef brings over here. There's something somewhat similar brought, although something somewhat similar from the Meshech Chochma, another somewhat similar thing from Moshe Feinstein. All of them are basically vaguely along the same lines, which is that with Avraham Avinu, he had there's one thing that he focuses on. He's a Yirei Elokim, and automatically everything else comes with it. As opposed to Eiv, he didn't have that close connection with the Eidishter that Avraham did, and therefore. He couldn't, like, for example, one point is that therefore he couldn't automatically figure out based on his Yiras Shemayim what's right and what's not right to do, and therefore he had to work on many different middos in order to make sure that he's always doing the right thing. So in other words, Fakert, we're not saying that he's greater than Avraham. We're saying, on the contrary, he had to focus on many different areas of Avodah, whereas Avraham only had to focus on the one, and therefore automatically and everything automatically flows from that. The Medrash, in fact, says about Avraham, it says that his two kidneys were advising him what's right and wrong according to what the Eidishter wants. Whereas Eiv didn't have that, and therefore he has to work on an Avodah B'Koyach Atzmoy, but therefore he has to work in a variety of different ways to be not only Yirei Elokim, but also Tom, and also Yosho, and also Sor Merah, in order to make sure that he's always on the right path. So as I said, Anaf Yosef talks about one angle of it. He says that Avraham Avinu had bitul b'metzios, everything he's doing for Yiras Shemayim, as opposed to Eiv, didn't have that, and therefore he has to work on different angles. And again, the Meshech Chochma and Rav Moshe talk about similar ideas, just in different osias, all along those lines that Avraham had a certain advantage when it comes to his avodah that Eiv didn't, and therefore Avraham's avodah comes out to be greater, but takes less effort in many different areas, and he can focus on the one thing Yiras Shemayim. So the pasuk continues, Vayana Satan as Hashem Vayomar. So the Satan replies to Hashem, and he says, Hachinam Yorei Eiv Elokim. Do you think that Eiv is fearing Hashem for nothing? You think he's doing it just in order not to get a reward? That he's doing purely l'shem shemayim, like the way Avraham Avinu does. Haloi atasachta bado. He says to him, didn't you protect in front of him? You put psachta meloshen soches darkech. It means like you put a hedge in front of him, like to protect him from any dangers that might come his way. Over ad beisoy and in front of his household. Over ad kolashaloi and in front of everything that he has. Misoviv all around. Maise yoder beirachta. You bless the Satan says to Hashem. You bless the work of his hands. Umiknehu poratz ba'aretz and his livestock have poratz in the land. Now, the simple meaning of poratz means increased, but the Gemara is going to explain in a second it has another meaning. First of all, my maise yoda beirachta. What does that phrase mean, that you've blessed the work of his hands? If it already says that Hashem protected everything he has, then what does it need to add that you blessed the work of his hands? Also, Ion Yaakov points out, part of the question is, usually the bracha would come before maise yodecha. Oveirach es maise yodecha is the Lashon HaPasuk. But here, maise yoda beirachta, the beirachta comes at the end. So what does that mean? Is that compliment? He's saying to Hashem, you know why Eiv is a Yoreh Shemayim? Because he has such riches and such sentiment and such success in this world, and therefore, so naturally he figures I should continue to fear Hashem and do what Hashem wants, so that I'll stay rich and successful. He's not doing it l'shem Shemayim. Yeah. So my Yoreh Beirachta. Anybody who would take even a pruta from Iyav, meaning who would do business with him, would get a bracha. And if there was a bracha in the very coins that Iyav would give people. Some Mephoroshim explain it means particularly what he would give for tzedakah. Other Mephoroshim explain that anybody who would do business with him. When we talk about the whole idea of receiving dollars or years before that, people would receive nickels or dimes from the Rebbe. It was also based on this idea. Kol anot apurta me'iyev misbarech. So that's Maisei Yod HaBerachta. You have it's the work of his hands, and now you put an extra bracha in it that not only he gets the bracha, but anybody that he has dealings with also gets a bracha. Mayu Miknehu Poras Varets, when the Sultan continues that his livestock has poras in the land. Now, it can't just mean that they increased. Maharsha points out because when the word poras is used to increase, then you have it together with the word riboy, like vayifrots l'roiv, or v'chein yuba v'chein yifrots. He was only Miknehu Poras Varets without the Chodesh Rova. So what does it mean? Also, the Rif points out if it's already saying Maisa Yoda Berachta, then what is it being? Then what is it added by Mekneu Poras Varets? So, Omer of Yosef Bachanina, Mekneu Shal Iyev Poras Gidre Shal Oilam. What it means is that Iyev's livestock broke through the normal patterns of the way things are in the world. The way it usually is in the world is the wolves kill the sheep, kill the goats. With Eev's livestock, his goats would kill the wolves that came to attack them. So that's Poras Varets, like they broke through the normal way. This is not the normal way things are. By the way, Ben Yehoyada makes a point over here as far as this and as far as a thing the Gemara says in a few lines that Hashem gave Eev a foretaste of Olam Haba. Ben Yehoyada points out that itself should have clued Eev in that there's something the matter. He might be using up his entire Olam Haba in this world. So he should have realized that maybe there's a problem over here. The fact that he didn't is held against him, then we're saying. So this is also part of the Sultan's accusation. How is it that he's enjoying such tremendous goodness, even beyond Minhag Shel Olam, and he's not thinking, you know what, what's going to happen, what's going to be with my Olam Haba? Maybe give it back to Hashem. Maybe at least, well, I can tell you, actually, I've heard a story about a gvir by the name of Halper, and he was a mechutin of the Ruzhiner Rebbe, where at one point, he also is a tremendous gvir, at one point he realized that things are being unnaturally successful for him, and he actually gave up his wealth for a while in private goes. So maybe the idea is that he should have done the same thing.
He gave up his wealth
for a period of time, at least, and went in Golis. He went in Golis like a poor beggar around for a period of time. Yeah.
Okay.
What?
I'm sorry.
In this way, there's an expression in the Gemara in Erchin, I think it is, that says if a person goes 40 days straight without the slightest bit of Yisurim, then it means he's gotten his whole Olam Haba in this world. So this Greer Halpern realized that he's in danger of that. So he being a Baal Madrega, you don't get to be a Mechutin of the Ruzhiner by being a simple guy. So he realized the lesson. So apparently what Ben Yehoyada is saying is Eev should have realized the same kind of thing. So the Sultan continues, V'ulam shlachna yodchum agama. So the Sultan says to Hashem, now, if you stretch your hand out against him and you start harming his possessions, then you'll see he won't be such a frum guy anymore and he'll revile Hashem. So v'yomer Hashem al Sultan, Hashem says to the Sultan, hine kol asher lo biyadecha, fine, everything that he has is in your possession, rak elevat is under your control, rak elevat tishlach yadecha v'gomer, but don't stretch out your hand against him. So you can harm anything that belongs to Eev, any of his household or possessions or anything, but not him personally. So the pasuk describes, v'yihi hayom, so the day came, his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in the house of their eldest brother. Interesting point, by the way, Mephor should make on the Pasuk. In the earlier, a few Pesukim earlier, the Pasuk tells how his children, every day they would go and have a feast in the house of another one of the brothers. He had seven sons and three daughters, so every day they would have a party in a different brother's house. And then, when a cycle of that ended, then the Pasuk says that Eev would gather them together and bring Korbanos on their behalf and say, you know what, during all their feasting and everything, maybe they may have cursed Hashem in their hearts. Maybe they may have figured who needs Hashem were being so successful. So now Mephoshim say, when it says Vayhi Hayom, they're eating in the house of their eldest brother, means it was right after one of those cycles that ended and he had brought Korbanos on their behalf. So you would think they're at the best situation, Beruchnius, and now is when the disasters started happening. Malach Baal Iyov. So a messenger comes to Iyov, and he says, "Habakor hayu choshes." The cattle were plowing, v'hasonis royas al yedehim, and the donkeys were grazing near them. And then the pasuk goes on to describe how Shva came and cap how soldiers from Shva came and captured all the animals and killed the attendants who were with them. So what's this? My habakor hayu choshes v'hasonis royas al yedehim. What does this mean? What's the point of mentioning this point that the cattle were plowing and the donkeys were grazing next to them? This teaches us that Hashem was giving Eov a foretaste of Olam Haba. Meaning, in other words, that what you have is, the oxen are plowing, and at the same time already the greenery is starting to grow, so that the oxen right next to there can already be grazing from the greenery that's growing right away. Rashi points out that the same way, for example, as it says by Yemosim Mashiach, Horoviyeh Ledes Yachta, when we come back from Golos, the pregnant and the one who gives birth will be together, meaning a woman will become pregnant and give birth on the same day, Lasid Lavay, the same way over here, the same way, Me'en Olamabah, is that you plant and it right away starts growing, so Eev was having a foretaste of that. And again, part of the idea is, in other words, he should have realized that maybe he's consuming his whole Olamabah in this world, and maybe he should take steps to prevent it, but he didn't. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beth Hashem, with the next part of the story, what happened to the rest of Eve's possessions and what happened from there. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Chamish Asa V'Shvat, Shana Le'ilon. So we have the pasuk about the Shivas Haminim. The Jewish people are compared to earth in which there are precious stones and pearls buried and found underground. But you have to look for them. You have to keep on looking for them because there's only certain places in the world where you will find such gems. So you have to dig very, very deep because in general you're going to find such gems and things like that very deep in the ground. So you have this plowing, but this is even more than plowing. And your guide to your matzasa, the effort is much greater, and therefore the reward is much greater. And then you have, so you consider the effort that it takes to plow in order to grow greenery and crops, like we were just saying, versus to mine jewels and diamonds. You have to dig much deeper. So now that I've talked about Nesicha and Chamisha Asa B'Shvat, Tavshin and Beis, that we have to use this time of Rosh Hashanah Le'ilon to strengthen everything that's connected with this avodah of Eretz of the land of the Shivas Aminim for oneself and both as far as oneself and as far as affecting the other person. Yehiratzin, that ever continued, that Achlot Tova and all of that should, and Hashem Yirov Alev, if Hashem can see what a person is thinking in his heart, and Hashem knows what the Achlot is, will immediately, right away, bring the schar that Benoreinu of Iskenu Renelech will run with Anane Shmaya to our Seinu Akdosha, to the complete whole Eretz Yisrael, not just the land of the Ten Umas, but that it will have all those things, Chito, Soda, Geffen, and so forth, will make the Bracha Ala Oretz Al Pereseha, and also that it will be a land full of precious stones and jewels. In Eretz Yisrael itself, will come to Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, the Har HaKodesh, to the Bais Mikdash, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where in fact you find a stone, and not just a not a precious stone, but the Evan Shesia, which is the most precious of all, after all. Miyad Mamash. Okay, we began yesterday with the halachas of tzitzis, so we were talking about that a person should be wrapping himself in tzitzis as early as possible in the morning. Now, we put on a talis cotton, which is not exactly wrapping, so we'll talk later on what exactly we do with that. But first, as one is starting to wrap himself in his talis, before he wraps himself up completely, he says the bracha l'isatif b'tzitzis. The Alter Rebbe says here in Shulchan Aruch that it should be bat tzitzis with a patach, because it means in the tzitzis, which is how you find it in Nusach Ashkenaz Siddurim. However, in the end, later on, the Alter Rebbe changed his mind, and in the Siddur you'll find it bit tzitzis, with a shva. And then you have the details of in Sefer HaMenhagim that you put your talis, you fold your talis cotton, you put it on your shoulder, check the tzitzis, and you meanwhile say the psukim Baruch Hinafshi. Then you unfold it, you kiss the top, you swing it around until it's behind you, and then you begin the bracha le'isata fetzitzis, and you end the bracha as you're about to bring the corners in front of your neck and over your shoulder, ta'tifas ha'yishmeilim, to wrap yourself like the Yishmeilim do, as the Alter Rebbe is going to explain later on. So the reason why that, as far as bit tzitzis versus bat tzitzis, the Shara Kol explains that You don't wrap yourself in the tzitzis themselves. To say that it's not to bat tzitzis would suggest that we're wrapping ourselves in the tzitzis themselves. We don't. We wrap ourselves in a talus that contains the tzitzis. Therefore, bit tzitzis is more correct according to that, and it's also more correct according to Kabbalah, which is why that's our nusach.